and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, brought to you by Learning Essentials. Learning Essentials offers special education-based support, educational therapy, academic therapy, and IEP coaching by state-certified educators with advanced degrees in all areas of special education. The Special Ed Strategist podcast brings professionals together to educate and empower families navigating special education needs and the IEP process.
Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist Pod, where we strategize all things special ed. If you're a new parent to special education or a seasoned parent sitting at the IEP table, you do not want to miss this episode. Grab a pen, paper, cup of coffee, get prepared to take notes. Today, I'm talking to Beth at the IEP Lab, and we are focused on three missed opportunities for parent advocacy as it relates to the IEP process. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I'm a mom and a special educator obsessed with helping parents and professionals bridge learning gaps and build kick-butt IEPs. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a like and a follow. If you love what you hear today, go ahead and share this with a friend. Let's jump in and welcome Beth. Hi, Beth. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm excited for us to chat about IEPs and helping families.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So can you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell our listeners why you are part of the special ed strategy world and just give us some background?
Absolutely. So my name is Beth Liesenfeld. I'm an occupational therapist by training, and I am the founder of the IEP Lab and also have the Parent IEP Lab podcast. And, you know, I got into this world because I was an adaptive horseback riding instructor, and we have talked about that because we have that in common, which is amazing. Yes. And then I found occupational therapy through there. So I had a lot of background with working directly with families. And so fast forward, I went through OT school, worked in clinics, worked in homes, worked in early intervention, and then switched to schools. And when I got to schools, I was so trained to go to the parents and say, okay, what do you want for your children? What do you want the goals to be? And they looked back at me from across the IEP table and they were like, don't you know what you're doing? You should know all this stuff. So I felt like a disconnect in that particular setting between, man, these parents really don't expect to have a say, and what is wrong with our system? And as I went through, and I was in a district that doubled in size in 5 years, and we had people from all over the country transferring into our district. And so I got to see IEPs from all over the country and neighboring districts that were coming in to this particular school. And as I sat through meetings and meetings and meetings, because I was in about 80 per year, I started to see really similar themes in parents that were able to get a really high quality IEP that was truly supportive for their kid, and that the team was really energized and really excited to implement, and parents that kind of shut down that inspiration or shut down the team, or the team wasn't willing to work with. And I started to notice those patterns. So I decided to kind of give parents an insight into the IEP process, into the culture of schools, because I feel like there's a lot of secrecy in this whole thing. And so that's what my business is based on. So I help parents really get an effective IEP, learn how to advocate by really providing some insight into how the system works so they can work with the system instead of feeling like they're fighting the system all the time.
That collaboration is such a key component for parents in this IEP process. And it's absolutely true. You do, from sitting at the IEP table, both for me as a parent and as a professional, you see the outcomes with folks that are informed and feel empowered of understanding what is going into the process of that IEP, and having that parent be familiar and confident with their goal.
So I think parents probably hear a lot that they're the expert in their child. And I feel like that's just too vague. I feel like we need to break that down a little bit. So I like to break that down into three parts. So parents know their child's challenges, and even if they have a diagnosis, they know how that diagnosis affects them better than anybody else. For medical moms or medical parents, this is like, you actually know the genetic condition. You actually have sat through those appointments. You have more knowledge than the team. There's been so many times where even I'm like, oh, I haven't seen that genetic condition. Let me Google it real fast. The parent has been through that diagnosis process. They know more about that. And then we really saw this in the neurodivergent movement and are still seeing this, where one person with autism or one autistic person is one autistic person. So yes, you can say my child has autism, but really the parent is the one that says, oh yeah, they have sensory sensitivity. They're sensitive to sounds. You can really break that down for the team so that we're not starting like square one saying, okay, they have this diagnosis of autism. What does that mean? So parents really have an expert knowledge in what their child's challenges are. And if they have a diagnosis, how that diagnosis actually shows up in their child, because that's different for everybody. The second thing is the parent is the visionary. Even if you have a really young kid, you have some sort of idea about what you want their education to look like. Are they really going to benefit from being with every other peer in this big classroom? Some of them do. Some of them love to follow other people, and those peer models are actually more important than the teachers, right? And then some people you're like, oh man, they just can't handle the noise of a big classroom, right? So you're going to want something different for your kid out of their schooling than another person, right? And you are the person who's most vested in this. You can say, hey, you know, especially like older elementary kids, you can kind of see, okay, I want after school is over, I want them to be able to live independently. Or maybe you're like, yeah, they can totally go to college. Maybe they need some accommodations. Maybe we need to work on this. But, you know, you have kind of a vested interest in their future. And without that, the team, like the school team, is going to make that decision for you. So would you like to have some input in that? I would hope so. And then really not defaulting to the team for that. Maybe they can help support you and saying, yeah, I think they are capable of this. Yeah, we need to build up these skills. But really, the parent is going to know what they want for their kid more than anybody else, right? And then the third thing, and I think the most important thing, is being the accountability partner for the schools. And this is when you have to be really careful with how you word things. You have to make sure that you have the right intention when you communicate, because this is when you can ask something if something's getting implemented, and you can easily put the school on defensive mode. And so the accountability partner is just really making sure that you have a system set up so that you know what's happening in school. Are they making progress on their goals? What does that look like? Are things getting implemented? And if they aren't, like accommodations, right? A lot of times they aren't getting implemented like you would want to. You need to know that first, and then you need to be able to bring that up to the team and kind of problem solve through that with the team too. So again, you are the person who is most vested in your child's future. If that IEP isn't getting implemented, then knowing what to do from there is really, really important and really hard too.
And this is three areas that are very informative for parents, you know, knowing your child best, but honing in on are those specifics and what does that mean from setting to setting, being that visionary for your child to help set them up for future education, employment, and independence, as you would under our special education law, and also being an accountability partner to help problem solve as a collaborative team member. And so I want to kind of just break this down a little bit further with you. So I am a medical mom, and my kiddo is a brain cancer survivor. And again, I had to be that individual. My husband and I had to have that conversation with the team of what does this impact? What does this look like for our specific son? But we also know, just as you said so lovely, that students that are neurodivergent, they are impacted in different ways. And so having that parent say, yes, there's this label on my student, on my child, but this is what it looks like for them. And to be able to articulate that to a team is such a gift, because then it's taking out the guesswork for the team to be able to say, okay, I know this kiddo is going to melt down if I hand them a pencil or a pen, but what are some other creative ways that we could get that same information out of the kiddo and avoid these meltdowns? I think that's a really important thing for parents to understand. And then to the visionary component, we have our students, we know that for, you know, 18 years of schooling plus, if they're going to do post-secondary, that we have the vision, and that vision is going to change from year to year, but you were this, they're constant. As a parent, you're the constant in that IEP process and IEP journey. So why wouldn't you be a mainstay and a voice during these meetings? Because your case managers are going to change, your teachers are going to change, your child is going to change as they grow and develop. So to be able to articulate the vision and have it kind of updated, I always say to parents, you know, where do you want to see your child in a month, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years? So you're always thinking ahead. Of course, that changes, but you're also then able to articulate that to the team and start to draw on resources that are available, because a lot of the resources may take you a couple of years to access. Mm-hmm. So having that vision is really important.
Yeah. And I see, and I feel this for parents when they're like, I don't know what they're capable of. I don't know what that's going to look like. But my recommendation for that, and if I can be so bold to like talk about groups of people here, but the Down syndrome community is excellent at this because they are very supportive of each other. Their associations are very close, and you get to know people with Down syndrome that are adults. You get to see, oh, what kind of challenges are they having? Do I think that my child will have those same challenges? And can we address that? Oh, I see that, you know, they need to self-advocate. Is that going to be a challenge for my kid? You get a comparison to see what are some common struggles with the older kids and the adults with Down syndrome. How can I prepare for that? And I think that some other communities aren't as well connected with adults with that disability. And because more people are coming out and more adults with these disabilities are coming out on social media, they are so much easier to find now to say, okay, here's a wheelchair user that is an adult. These are some of the challenges that they have. Can we address some of that right now? And I think that's a really good hint to be connected with your community and with, I mean, it doesn't even have to be your physical community. It can be online. And so that you can see and connect with people that are adults that have that disability so that you can hear directly from them. Okay. What might my child need when they are an adult, and how do we prepare for that right now?
Absolutely. And even that's the benefit from the IEP lab that you provide, the IEP collaborative that we provide over at Learning Essentials, so that we're bringing families together to figure out resources, to have this commonality, to bounce ideas off of, so that you can then, again, be empowered when you're sitting at that IEP table to make suggestions, recommendations, problem solve in a positive way, right? Because we certainly don't want to turn off our team because they're working with our child. So we want to really try to make it professional and positive, but really knowing that you are the leader of this conversation because it is your baby and it's your, you know, your mama heart, and you come from this place of fear and love as a parent. And so you want to make sure that your child is getting the best that they can within this, you know, four walls of the school during the school day, and being able to access what they need, and then also being able to transfer that out into their daily life beyond the school.
Exactly. Yes.
Let's talk about that. So tell me about some challenges that may present. You mentioned data. So how could parents collect data on their own child? Because I'm sure they say to you, hey, well, Beth, I'm not in the classroom every day. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what they're doing. So how do you guide parents on that?
Yeah. And I think you hit that on the head where it's like, okay, I don't know what's happening, right? And sometimes you have really great staff members that know that's important. And so especially I think in preschool, you have those preschool teachers that you will see them at pick up and drop off a lot of the times. So you will have more contact with them. And that transition into kindergarten is really hard because now you're like, oh, I'm dropping them off at the playground, or they're riding the bus. And so you don't have that natural contact with that person. So hard to know what's actually happening. And I know I just changed daycares for my two-year-old, and I went from kind of a bigger center that had, you know, an app and they would put in updates and what he had for lunch. We decided, because he was a little bit anxious, to kind of change to a home care provider. And I love her. He's so much happier in that environment, but I'm not getting a whole lot because she's one person with like six kids in her house. And so I knew that was going to happen, but I get really strategic with what questions I ask before and after, right? When I'm like, oh, okay, like I need an update and I need to ask for an update if I'm feeling nervous or unsettled or something. So it's having that confidence to ask for that first. But also there's a couple different ways that you can ask for a communication strategy to be in place. And I think when I was in schools, out of like the 80 kids that I had on caseload, maybe like 5 of them would have a really good communication system. Traditionally, this has been a back and forth book. So it was like a physical notebook that just stayed in the kid's backpack and it went back and forth to school and school'd write in it an update. And then it would go home and then the parents would write an update, right? Things like they didn't need breakfast today. They didn't sleep well, you know, things like that. And then the school would write back, okay, we did this activity today. He looks like he's making progress in this, blah, blah, blah. Now, more recently, yes, that back and forth book is still a really good solid communication system, but we have so many more options when it comes to communication systems. And you might just want to start with what is easiest for that staff member, that case manager, that contact person that you have to use, because if it's something they're already using, they might use it more frequently. It might be easier for them to use, right? But that's a decision that you guys can make. But there's a lot of electronic versions. So there's things like apps like Class Dojo or Seesaw that people might already be using for class communication that can just be a daily check-in for you guys. Like, okay, are they making progress? How is this particular issue going? Hey, can we change things at home to making the morning transition better? Communication like that, so you can get a little bit more feedback. And then there's also things like I've had families want a Google Doc. So it's just a running Google Doc. The thing that I don't like about that is people can alter that record. Mm-hmm. And so if you're like, well, things might be fishy, then please don't do that one. Do a different one. You can also do, so the first thing is just a communication system, right? And again, some staff members really buy into this. They're like, yes, you need to know, you know, it's easy for them to do. And some staff members just are overwhelmed or it's not their thing, or you just don't get a lot back from them. And that's when you can go a step further and you can ask for observations. You can go in and observe a classroom. You can see how they're implementing their goals, so that you get some context about, are they making progress in this or are they not? And really just the more that you're invested, the more that you're there and asking questions, not to be critical, but just to gather more information because you care about your child, the more information you're going to get back from them, right? So again, communication system, back and forth book or electronic communication, and then you can do some observations. And always the last thing that I'm going to say on this is that there were so many times during parent-teacher conferences that the special ed staff wouldn't talk to a single parent. And I think that's a big missed opportunity, right? They are still there in the building. So if you're doing parent-teacher conferences, yes, go see your classroom teacher, right? But also think about touching base, even if it's just an email to the rest of the team and saying, hey, can I get a progress report? Can I, you know, sit with you and chat with you a little bit about how they're doing? And that's a huge missed opportunity as well.
So a lot of these suggestions I can see easily applying for elementary school, like the observations and stuff. Mm-hmm. What do you have any suggestions for our parents that are just getting IEPs, say upper elementary, middle, or even high school? And how do we then keep that communication strategy, but then also infuse the advocacy part on our students?
Mm-hmm. I do think it's harder for sure to do this in middle school and high school, just because of the vast number of people that interact with your kid on a day-to-day basis. I would say these communication systems still work. You will again have teachers that are really amazing, really love this challenge of having different learners in their class. And they will be the ones that volunteer to come to your IEP meetings and they will, you know, email you back and forth. I have found that a lot of middle schools actually have some more opportunities within their email systems and within the way that they run their classroom. So in the middle schools that I worked in, they had a hub that students would log into, and it was called Canvas. I'm sure like every school has something different, but you could send messages within that platform, and you could also, you know, check grades, see what assignments needed to be turned in, see the grade book, that kind of thing in real time. And that was really helpful. But I also feel like when middle school teachers actually know their parents. So even at the beginning of the year, you can send an email at the beginning of the year and say, oh my gosh, we're so excited. My child's going to be in your classroom this period. You know, these are their accommodations. Even though a special education teacher should be communicating that, if they also have you as a hub to be like, oh yeah, like I know their mom. They emailed me. They're involved. They wanted to be a resource for me. I have this question. I find that middle school teachers are really good about saying, hey, this isn't working. Like, we need to change something. And they tend to be more direct personalities, I feel like, in my experience with middle school teachers. You just kind of have to be to work with that population, and even high schoolers even more. So I feel like if you have an issue, if you have a concern, they are pretty easy to work with as far as like problem solving and figuring it out, right? But I would just be that contact person at the beginning of the year and say, heads up, so excited. Here's the accommodations. Here's a little bit about my kids so that you can be prepped. And in my experience, those middle school and high school teachers love to have that heads up, because I feel like they're not in the know as much as like an elementary school teacher when, you know, they have so many kids on IEPs in their classroom for the whole year and they know that. Whereas every quarter or every trimester, those middle school and high school schedules are changing. And so that heads up is really nice in the beginning for them.
What advice do you have for parents if the team or a school or a teacher is not on board with that consistent communication?
This is a really hard one. And sometimes it just takes time to develop that relationship. I think if you start out with, again, really communicating your intention, hey, I want the best for my kid. Hey, this didn't go well last year, and I want to try to work through this again. And also, I think we're maybe going to talk about this in a little bit, but having a clear vision statement and communicating that to the entire team before you even get into the school year, like at this time when we're starting up in schools, you having a vision statement for your child and communicating why you're going to advocate takes the pressure off a little bit, because I think that it's pretty easy when we don't get a lot of communication to fall into that accusatory mode and be like, you're not doing this. What's wrong? Like, this is your job. Like, let's go. And so if you communicate that vision statement and really say, I really want this for my kid this year. I really want to build these skills for my kid this year, because they're going to need it when they're in fifth grade, when they're, you know, whatever your vision is for your kid. And I think that's really important to be ahead of it a little bit and to say, hey, I'm going to ask for some communication every day. What works best for you? If you have that collaborative mindset going in and saying, this is why I need it. And then reminders, right? So if you're not getting that communication, if you've kind of been ahead of things, sent them an email, hey, I really need this communication system. What works for you? You're not getting a response. Then it's time to be like, okay, like I need to ask you for a meeting. And then this is where the knowledge of the system comes into play. Because if you're not getting what you need from the school, then you can say, hey, I need to problem solve this. If you don't get a response from who you need to talk to, then it's time to go to the principal or go up and say, hey, I know they're really stressed out. Is there anything that I can do? Am I asking the wrong way? Like, I really need some more information about what's happening. How can we get this into place? And again, it comes from that place of, I want the best for my kid. This is what I want them to work on this year. How can I help you help my kid? And so, but that's like the knowledge of the system, right? Because if you don't know that you can go to the principal, or if you don't know you can go to the special education coordinator, then you feel stuck and you're like, this person is frustrating me, and you don't have anywhere to turn. So that's where the knowledge of the system comes in.
So good. And that is why, you know, it is important. I love how you're framing this. How can I help you help my child, and setting it up? And you helped me set up the conversation and the next step here about this vision statement. We talked about a parent being a visionary and thinking ahead, but how do they communicate that to the teachers, to the IEP team? You know, what is the vision statement? We talked about why it's important, but when should parents think about it? Let's dive in here.
Sure, absolutely. And before we get into the vision statement, it's just, you know, I don't want to say like, this is all on the parent, right? It's probably really overwhelming to be like, oh my gosh, like I have all of these things to do. And, you know, the school really has a responsibility. They absolutely do, but you can get more out of them by doing some of this preloading work. And then I'm going to say this about the vision statement too. Once you have one vision statement, like you said, Wendy, you're going to update it every year, but it's not going to be this big thing, this big project that you do every year. It's going to be, oh yeah, I should send an email to my new team, you know, 15 minutes, right? At the beginning of the year, share some pictures from, you know, your summer, something fun. And then the same thing for with this vision statement, you can look back at last year's and be like, do I want to change it now that they're a year older? Like, what do I want for them? What did we learn over the last year? And you're just going to tweak it from there. So again, for parents that are new to this system, it's a lot, but you can break it down into pieces, make sure that you're kind of going through that process to determine priorities. And that's exactly what this vision statement is. So I do have an episode on my podcast that goes into really big detail about how to do this vision statement, but really briefly, I'm going to summarize. So this vision statement is, again, just a statement of what you want for your child in the next year, in the next 2 years. So it can be like a short-term vision statement, or if you have an older kid that's like in middle school or high school, this can be a vision statement for what's going to happen after they graduate. And so I recommend that people have one even in preschool. But when I've worked with parents that have like a brand new preschooler, they're like, well, they haven't been in school yet. And so yes, you do have to kind of wait and see how they're going to respond to that environment before you can really say, oh, I want this for my child in school, right? But really, you know, kindergarten on up, you can do this vision statement. And this is just things like, I really want my child to be able to work in teams with their peers within the classroom, or I really want my child to be included as much as possible. Or, you know, if they have dyslexia, you're going to say, I really want them to be able to have confidence and use some assistive technology tools so that they feel confident in their reading while they're working on the skills. They have other tools that they can use to get around that skill sometimes. So this can just be like what you want them to be able to do in the classroom. It can be related to academic skills. It can also be friendships. It can also be communication. It can also be being comfortable in their environment. You know, when we have some kids with some really big sensory sensitivities and they can't handle that classroom, maybe we need to work on accommodations this year. Maybe they need to trial some different headphones so that they can feel comfortable in their environment, because we got to work on that first before they're going to learn anything, right? We do not learn best when we are uncomfortable, when we're in a setting we don't belong in, or we feel like we don't belong in. And so we need to fix those things first. So these can be your priorities for the next couple of years. How you develop this is you start really big and you start dreaming for your kid. And you say, even if they're in kindergarten, you're like, man, I really want them to not need an IEP eventually. Maybe that's really cool. Let's work towards that. Or maybe you're like, okay, they're always going to have this disability. We're going to work with it. We're going to play to their strengths. But right now, the biggest barrier to them accessing their education is this. And so you're going to communicate that with your team. This really helps the team focus. A lot of teams, especially when I was supporting the autism classroom at the elementary level and even the middle school level too, actually it got really challenging at the middle school level with children who needed a lot of support and had autism. It was like, we could work on anything. We could literally work on all of the different skills. These kids could have 15 different goals, but it's just like New Year's resolutions. If you have 15 New Year's resolutions, that ain't going to happen. You're probably not going to get one of those. So we need to focus. And these vision statements really focus the team on what are the priorities? What are we going to do in the next year or two? What does the parent want to see for their kid? You know, and if we have that shared vision, all of a sudden too, you see a lot of like related service providers, like your school psychologist, your OTs, your PTs, all of a sudden they know what they're doing. They know their role on the team. It's like, oh yeah, if you want to work on accommodations, that's totally me as an OT. I can totally help with that. And all of a sudden you don't have this battle about services. They kind of understand why they're on that team for their kid. And they have a focus of what they're trying to do for your kid too. It's really cool.
What a huge celebration. And I love the part about for parents to think about their whole child, right? Oftentimes we think, oh, we're going to school for learning, but we also have to consider social, emotional, yes, the learning and how that comes into play with the whole child and how they interact with the teacher, their classmates, the environment, the building. So really building this capacity in all areas for our kiddo and dreaming big, because we all, you know, have dreams for our child, but then thinking about what are the main priorities for this year and for parents to know that those can shift, right? So if we are knock it out of the ballpark with priority one and two, then let's go back. What are our other priorities? How is this evolving, right? So this is an evolving process for parents to understand. And so for them, I always think of parents as the guide, right? In this journey, because they are guiding this IEP team on how to best support their child. And so that thinking of it that way really highlights that the importance that you have on that IEP team.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's the portion of my course that I have that it's everybody's favorite is how to go from that really big mindset of, oh my gosh, we want to work on everything. We have 15 goals to, oh my gosh, like how do we narrow this down? So yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard. I think it's parents aren't trained for this. And so I think it's really hard to put that on parents, but at the same time, like they are capable of doing it and they're probably the best people to get the best results out of their IEP. They are the best people to make those priorities and those vision statements. So how can we help parents better understand how to really determine those priorities? That's like the most amazing life-changing thing we could do for parents for sure.
Right. Because the world of special ed is a whole different language. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different language. And again, when you're coming from that pace of fear and love of your child and thinking forward in the future, having somebody kind of give you that information so that you can become organized, become empowered, come from, you know, this overwhelmed, chaotic feeling to calm and ready to just kick butt in that IEP process, everybody wins. Everybody wins with that, right?
For sure. Yeah. And once you have a pretty effective IEP, it's like we said before with everything, it's like once you have it set up, then you just got to tweak it from there. I mean, not everything is going to work in that. That's why my business is called the IEP Lab, because it's constantly tweaking. We change as parents and our knowledge of the system, our knowledge of our kids change all of a sudden, like they're not having challenges with this. Okay. So like, it's all a process, but once you get started and you have a good IEP in place, it's like, oh, okay, we got this. And then the stress kind of melts away. Right. So it's just getting oriented to this whole thing, get your priorities, get some help in the beginning, and then set it on coast and just tweak from there.
So our parents that have this gut feeling of something's not right with my child, something's not working in the classroom or the school, they don't yet have an IEP. Can you help guide parents a little bit and let's talk about what is that eligibility process and where are parents in that process?
Oh yeah. I love the eligibility process. You just gave me goosebumps, which is so weird. So many people, and I should say this, so many people in the schools, they love working directly with the kids and that is their passion and they hate the paperwork. And I love kids and I do miss working with them in the classroom, but I am jazzed up about paperwork. Like I love the process because what happens?
Probably have some eye rolls as people are listening.
I'm sure.
Because the paperwork is a lot, but when done right, it really opens the door.
Exactly. And that's what I was just going to say. Like when it's done right, everybody comes out of that IEP meeting jazzed. Like energy is high because we know we have a good plan for this kid. We know we're doing our best for this kid. We're going to try a bunch of things. We're going to be creative. And so if you can get that from your IEP team, where at the end of that meeting, everybody's like laughing, giddy with excitement to implement this IEP, it works. And it ends up supporting kids. It works, but it doesn't work for so many reasons if one part of the team is not working well for each other, right? So this eligibility process is really cool. And a lot of my advice to parents, you will see a theme even in this podcast episode, where I'm saying preload things. So when you go into, first off, if you don't even have an IEP yet, or if you're concerned, you can write a written request for testing for special education to determine eligibility, if they're eligible or not. And I have heard so many people say, especially like advocates tell parents a lot, request the full evaluation. Just say in writing, I request a full evaluation for my child. And I'm going to advise you not to do that. You can say that in the first sentence, but you need to break down what you're actually concerned about. Because as an OT, I can pretty much evaluate any barriers to this occupation of your child being a student. I can look at everything, but if you don't point me in a direction of what you're actually concerned about, then I'm probably not going to take a deep dive into what you're actually concerned about, right? I'm going to do this broad sweeping look at your kid, and I might not actually notice what you're most concerned about. So when you get that evaluation report back, you're going to be like, oh, they didn't capture my child very well. So the more that you can give that team direction on what you're actually concerned about, the better. Now, you mentioned about parent intuition, and this is huge because I hear so many parents say, I don't actually know what's going on. I'm not getting a lot of communication, but you have enough information from what teachers have mentioned to you, what you're feeling, what you're getting from your kids sometimes about what areas they're frustrated in. And so in that email or the letter that you write to request this evaluation, detail out the challenges that you think they're having. Even if you're not sure how to explain that, maybe give an example or two. And then leave it open at the end to say, these are just the challenges that I've noticed, but please, if you see any more challenges, please take a deep dive into those and really look at my child as a whole child. And so really start with that broad and request a full evaluation, but really kind of detail out what you are concerned about. Hey, they're coming home and they're falling apart, right? A lot of our autistic children who are masking during the day, which means they're kind of holding themselves together, and then they get home and they fall apart. A lot of times the school doesn't even know that. So you have some information to provide there as well. So that's the number one missed opportunity that I see, is even if you're doing a re-eligibility process, like the 3 years comes up, you're due for a re-eligibility process, do the same thing. Find your team's emails, send out a, hey, I'm really looking forward to getting a fresh new perspective on how my child is doing and what the barriers are, where they're doing well. I see the main concerns as this, this, and this. I'm looking forward to seeing what you find in this evaluation process, right? So that's like the number one thing, that the more you can be upfront about, hey, guess what? The team knows that you're looking, right? You know, you're involved and they know that. So they're going to be like, oh yeah, like she was concerned about this. We better have that in the report, right? The next thing is just when you go through that process and they're being tested, it seems like a really long pause. Like you'll get this form home that says, you know, permission to test. You have to give the team permission to test and you'll see what areas they're going to test. And then it just feels like forever, right? Until you actually get that meeting set up. Now, the next opportunity that you'll have is you should get an evaluation report home. And so you should have a couple days at least to look over that evaluation report. If you don't get it home before that meeting is scheduled, you need to email that case manager and say, hey, we need to move the meeting. I haven't seen the evaluation report yet. And
totally interrupted you, but that's because you're, again, back to that parent being a guide in a role in this process, you have every right to read and digest the same information that team has done. Even that team has worked on that evaluation. They wrote the report. They've had conversations in the hallway. You know, mm-hmm. They've observed the child. So they've been in the middle of it. So it is a great reminder for parents that you are an equal member of that team. So you have as equal much time to be able to say, all right, I need to process and ask questions mm-hmm. as you would in any decision that you're making in life, especially about your baby.
Absolutely. Yes. And you're totally right. Like they have processed it. They've probably had a team meeting where they're like, okay, is everybody set? Is everything in the eligibility? What kind of eligibility? And they're not allowed to decide the eligibility category without you. That is a touchy subject from a legal standpoint, but they probably have had a conversation of what categories are we considering, right? What evidence do we have that we can consider this category? Okay, cool. So we'll go through the checklist for this, this, and this in the meeting, and we'll see where we land, right? So they have to have some sort, they don't have to, but very frequently they're having those conversations of, okay, like they're prepping for the meeting and they're talking about what they're going to talk about. And if the parent isn't involved in those conversations, so yes, you need to see the eligibility report. Even if it's not very understandable to you, at least you will be familiar with it. And if I can make one recommendation, start at the evaluation summary at the bottom. And then if there's any details that you want to look for, then go back up into the report. But many times they're very long. And then this is the other thing where your email in the beginning is a record so that you can say, oh, these were the list of challenges that I wanted addressed in this evaluation report. Let me pull up that email that I sent you guys from 2 months ago and compare that to the evaluation summary. If there's any challenges that you had in your email or that you've thought of that are not showing up in that evaluation report, that's when you can say, hey, you guys don't have enough information. You missed this. And at least the way the Colorado checklist, eligibility checklist read, and you can weigh in on your state as well, is, you know, the first checkbox on the Colorado eligibility is, does the team have enough information to determine eligibility, even if the information is not related to the eligibility category that's being considered? So if you guys are like, man, they're struggling in reading and we can't figure this out, we're going to look at specific learning disability for their eligibility category. But there's also this challenge that you've seen with anxiety. Well, guess what? Even though anxiety isn't necessarily directly related to reading, they need to make sure that they have that information and they've looked at that, because anxiety absolutely can lead into being behind in reading. It could be something related to that. And so they need to have everything covered before you sit down and determine eligibility. So that's a really big parent veto that I see that parents have the opportunity, at least in Colorado. And I don't think, because that eligibility paperwork is like written backwards language, it's really hard to understand. And it's the first question on the Colorado eligibility is, do they have enough information? It gets missed a lot because parents are like, wait, whoa, what? Like, what did you just say? And trying to understand the question, they're like, yeah, sure, you had enough information, when maybe they didn't. So those are the main opportunities that I think parents have that they miss. And does eligibility category matter? We could argue that in a different podcast. Most of the time, yeah, it doesn't, but there are definitely situations where it does. So you want that evaluation report to be really accurate reflection of your kid, because that's what the IEP is based off of. And if a need isn't identified in that evaluation report, it's probably not going to get supported in the IEP. So be ahead of the process, know what's coming, be able to communicate what your child's challenges are, and just be that accountability partner and make sure that it makes it into the evaluation report.
Man, oh man, such nuggets of gold. And I know people are going to be listening to this, but Beth, you can agree, I was sitting there giving you a thumbs up, because yes, there's just a lot. I hope people that are listening have, you know, if they're distracted, come back, hit rewind, listen to that again, because that really sets a parent up for success. I love that word preload. As a special education teacher, I preloaded a lot for my students. So it's very helpful for adults that are learning something new as well, like the IEP process. And you're right, by breaking these steps down, kind of thinking through the process, having somebody talk you through the process, you're really going to ensure that you're setting your kid up for success. So early on, when you have that suspicion in your, you know, intuition, something's not right, even if the school is oftentimes, and I'm sure you've seen this, Beth, that the school's like, oh, well, your student's getting great grades. They're mm-hmm. not causing any distraction. They're mm-hmm. fine. They're fine. But that fine is not always fine for the real world. And that fine yeah. is not always going to get them to be the best version of themselves. So having that parent write their concerns out really helps narrow that focus of the team. And like you said, any other providers that are going to be doing the testing for that student to say, okay, these are the questions we have, but they're parent driven. So that really gives you that focus in that report and getting the answers. What is your suggestion for parents if the team doesn't agree?
I mean, I am not, you know, it depends on what they don't agree about, right? Mm. I mean, if we're mm-hmm. talking about services, but, you know, as far as forming the IEP is concerned on like, do they need the service? Do they need the goal? I like to talk about the paperwork as far as a funnel. And so again, staying ahead of the process, every state has kind of a different format for IEPs, but it's generally the same where you start with the present levels and then you get to the goals and the accommodations, and then you get to the services at the bottom. So again, you want to make sure that you have all of the challenges up at the top where it's at the present levels so that you can pull that down. So if you guys get to, because most of the conflicts that I see as far as forming the IEP come in goals and especially come in services, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
when you get to goals and services that are below present levels, which has all of the data, all of the information, all of the lists of challenges, all of the lists of strengths in the present levels, if you get to goals and you disagree about a goal, then you can refer back to the present levels and say, hey, let's go up to the present levels. Hey, we said that they were having challenges in this, and this is where they're marking on that goal. So say you're talking about like reading fluency. And so you have that data in the present levels above to then form an accurate goal below. If your present levels is all messed up and it's not accurate, you might have conflicts down below because not everybody's on the same page, right? And it's the same thing with services below that too. I see parents so often trying to advocate from the bottom of that document. So they need more OT. I hear this all the time, probably because I'm an OT. They need more OT. And so we're going from the bottom, but we haven't identified why they need OT at the top. And again, because I'm such a vague profession, I need a little bit more help on what I need to help them with because we can do anything. But really starting and focusing at the top to bring that down helps resolve some of those conflicts, because if you have a good present levels, then you should be able to agree on the goals. Now, here's the thing. I am not against advocates. I'm not against lawyers. I think they're totally appropriate to bring in when you need them. And I've seen some advocates just make sure that it's the right advocate that you mesh with well and is going to get you to your goals. If you're trying to be collaborative and you have an advocate who's really like got a legal background and they're ready to bring it to the team, then it's probably not a good match for you, right? Not all advocates are the same. But if you're really struggling over a conflict, then you really need either some backup, either bring a friend, bring a family member to that meeting so that you can really be calm emotionally, because that's another big barrier to being able to advocate effectively. It's an emotional process for sure. But make sure you have the backup that you need. And also, a really good resource that a lot of states have is called facilitated IEPs. Have you been in some facilitated IEPs?
I have. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're so cool, because what they do is, and for people who don't know, they're generally people who like work for the state, but they don't work for the district. And they're trained in this kind of running the meeting so that your school team doesn't have to, and just another neutral party. And what they do is they slow the meeting down. And because there's not this like me against you conflict anymore, there's three kind of teams involved in this. It's not just parents versus school team. It's this third party in there. They slow everything down. So at every section, so you do the present levels, they summarize the present levels. We made this decision. We added this information. Does everybody understand what's happening? Yes. Okay, then you move on. And it's such an amazing resource. And I've only been in two facilitated IEPs in over 6 years and a lot of conflict, high conflict meetings. And I'm like, why aren't we using this service more? It's free for everybody. And it's just an amazing way to calm everybody down and say, okay, well, why do you think that goal is not appropriate? Or why do you want this service? It slows everything down so that everybody can kind of piece together like why you're having this conflict and kind of break it apart. They're really not there to solve any conflict. That's for mediation. But I love this resource and I just want to shout from the rooftops about it because it's so amazing. So if you're feeling like you have conflict, you need to look into that.
I'm sure parents are Googling that right now, which is fantastic as to like, how do they get that? And so, really is just this mapping out process, taking data from you as a parent, educators, putting it together and really mapping out a plan for your child to be successful. And that really is kind of our overarching theme of how we do that. So it's the beginning of a new school year here as we're recording this. How should parents express their concerns or let the school know about their child?
I love a couple of different things that are very similar. The email that I was talking about before, where you're sending an email out to your school team saying, hey, welcome back. You can give a little update about their summer. And I call this bringing the human back in, especially if you've had conflict in the past. Reminding everybody that you're here for the kid is just amazing. And I remember getting an email from a parent at the start of a year, and I love this kid dearly. Like, we didn't have much conflict with this particular team and this parent family, but she sent us a couple pictures of their summer, and he was like in the pool and they had taken a trip and whatever. Those things stick in educators' minds. Like, that just makes me so happy that I now knew that he loved water, that I now knew he took road trips with his family. Like, that's such an amazing thing. So you can just give a little update. Hey, we worked on this over the summer. We started, you know, working on this. We've decided our focus for the year is this, kind of sharing that vision statement piece. That's just an excellent way to start off the year. And the other thing that I've seen that's really similar to this is, especially for like middle school and high school, there was a couple of families that had a particular binder that always stayed in their kid's backpack. And on it was just like a one sheet summary of their kid. Like, it had their accommodations on it, but it also had talk to me about these four topics. And so it was so awesome. It's like, I had this one child that was new to me. She had transferred schools and she definitely liked to talk about her preferred topics, but I didn't know her yet to know her what to ask her about. Right. So I pulled out that sheet, and actually I knew about the sheet from the parent sending an email and saying, hey, if you ever need this, it's in her backpack. So I pulled that out the one day and I was like, oh yeah, trains. Tell me about trains. And we had this amazing connection and conversation. And then we could transfer into doing an activity that was related to one of her interests. And it was awesome. So there's always that lag time, especially with new team members, of not knowing your kid. You can cut that time in half by just sharing
about
your kid.
That's like an express pass that you'd have at Disney. Express
exactly.
Lane pass. But even for substitutes, right? That are yes. Don't know your kid, and you know, or some are familiar in the building, but maybe not know your kid. So that's great to have a little fast pass way to having that conversation. So Beth, as we wind down, what should I have asked you I didn't know enough to ask?
I think we covered all of the things that I really love to share and teach parents. I think we covered data. I think we covered the parent role, and we touched a little bit on the vision statement. So I think you hit it on the head. I can't think of anything else.
Woot. All right. So what is your favorite productivity tool or resource that you like to share with parents right now? Something that you're totally geeking out about.
I mean, I think it's the facilitated IEPs I think that's a productivity tool. So, I mean, if you get more done in those meetings, that's totally a productivity tool. So I love facilitated IEPs right now. I love them.
And then what would it be and why, if you could have a billboard with one tip for parents?
I mean, this sounds so bad because I am definitely a proponent of collaboration, but in the first district that I worked at, I worked in a really rural school, and that population of parents, like if I can lump them all together, really trusted the school team, I think, much more than they should have. They said, whatever you think, you know, you're the experts. And so if I could put one tip on the billboard, not to knock like collaborativeness, right? But I would say, don't always trust your school IEP team, because I think parents, when they start studying this process and they start connecting with other parents and learning about the system, a lot of times I feel like they know more than the school staff does about the process and writing IEPs. So I would say, like, trust your gut. And I would say, don't always trust your IEP team.
There you go. There you go. But it incentivizes, or just in highlights, I think is probably the word, the importance for parents to become knowledgeable and become mm-hmm. that guide for their kiddo.
Absolutely. It's definitely a time investment. It's definitely an emotional energy investment in the beginning, yes. But I promise you, it gets better and better as you go along, and it takes less energy and less time as you go along too.
Amen. Where can folks find you and learn more about the IEP Lab?
Absolutely. So you can go to my website, theieplab.com, and we actually have an amazing summit that's happening September 22nd to 25th that is free for parents until the 22nd. So grab your free ticket to the summit. There's 18 speakers all the way from like basics of IEPs and really starting at the beginning to get oriented to the system, all the way to strategies for communication and parent advocacy skills as well. So they can go to theieplab.com/summit and they can grab their free ticket there until the 22nd. If you're listening to this afterwards, you just have to pay a little bit to access so that you can see the recordings for the things that you missed. So,
and Beth did say free. Free until until the 22nd. So yes. I mean, run, grab, stop what you're doing. To have free resources at your fingertips is incredible. So Beth, I really have enjoyed this conversation. I think it's going to guide parents in a way that they're going to feel over the moon with. And I appreciate you taking your time to have this talk with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for listening again to the Special Ed Podcast. Man, that was an informative discussion. My strategy takeaways today was front load your communication, organize your thoughts and visions, and be that accountability partner for your kiddo. Thank you again for strategizing with us and sharing your earbud space. If you love what you hear, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials.
Thank you for joining us today for our Special Ed Strategist Podcast. To hear more pro tips and find additional IEP essentials, including our IEP webinar, please visit www.learningessentialsedu.com.